I can't thank you enough for how good you're being to me.
It's a labor of love.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 2, It's a Bad World After All. And now here are your bad hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting. Boo, terrible.
Hi.
Oh, boy.
Hello.
Always nice when we get a reminder of Dave not so secretly thinks of us.
Yeah, no, I was up to date on that. Thanks, though.
So was I. We had a minor fight before we started about my tone. Anyway, hello, Sarah. let us talk about our next Patreon episode. Again with this, episode 24 is dropping November 27th, aka Black Friday. The topic is, let's read about Melrose Place in dueling Rolling Stone and Entertainment Weekly cover stories. The Entertainment Weekly story is still online. We'll link it in the show notes in case you want to prepare. The Rolling Stone one is too, but it's subscriber only.
We are also giving you something to be thankful for by dropping our first episode of Again With Them, our podcast on Jenny Garth and Tori Spelling's recap podcast, 90210 OMG. That's this Thursday, November 26th, aka Thanksgiving Day in the US. This is a bonus perk exclusive to Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. So if you want to hear it, make sure you are at that level or above.
Indeed. I just wanted to add that...
See what I mean? It felt like there was going to be more to that. And then there's like this dead space. And then Tara's like,
I'm sorry. I just wanted to a peek behind the curtain. You're hearing this much, much after. But we're recording this the week that their podcast first dropped. And we have gotten so many messages about how terrible it is. I haven't actually listened to it yet. But the first one from our listener, Gregory J., came in yesterday. Hey, Gregory. And he was like, $5 is not enough. You should be charging more because it's brutal. And then
he gave us more, which he did.
Thank you, Gregory. So shout out to him. Our friend Linda also tweeted, like, you know, if you're going to do something like this, then maybe half of the podcast should not be I don't remember, because apparently that is a feature of what their podcast is like. So, wow. Way to prepare, ladies. What? So I'm like half dreading how bad it's going to be and half like very schadenfreudely looking forward to how bad I expected it to be and how much worse it actually is going to be in actuality. And yet they're number one on the charts. So who's the idiot? Me, I guess.
Well, yeah. Like, how are we not? How are they not backing a Brinks truck up to our houses? Come on. I know we don't have five kids, but I have a lot of pets. Hello.
I mean, we know why. They are celebrities. This is how the economy works, sadly, even in podcasts now.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you feel that the cosmic balance is not where it should be, that's the perfect time for you to go to patreon.com/againwiththis and throw some money our way instead.
I have a solution to that problem.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sort of relieved that it's that terrible.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're about to find out.
My solution is this. In order to... One of you needs to become a celebrity.
Uh-huh.
And also we have to take care of podcast trends in our planning. So I propose that Sarah D. Bunting murder one or more people in a very strange and mysterious way. And we can just like get everything together.
I feel like
together.
Tara should do the murdering, and I feel like I know who the victim is going to be. Spoiler.
I mean, anyone who's been listening to any of our podcasts, it's not going to be much of a mystery, frankly.
I love you plenty.
Too late.
Speaking of people trying to murder their spouses, let's talk about this episode. Starting with our C-plot. Oh, actually, before we even get into that, I swear... We've seen all of the B-roll at the top of this episode. Milkman delivering bottles, jogger on the side of the road, and on later era 90210. Did you know this as well?
I didn't. Although it's not in this episode, I think it's the next episode where our favorite Kelly Taylor 70s modeling agency B-roll makes its appearance. So yeah, they're recycling for sure.
Oh yeah, they've been at that location before. Yes, Joe has had photo shoots at that studio for sure. Anyway, all right, let's start with our C plot. Brittany is still present for some reason. That reason will become clear at the end of this plot line, but let's get to it, sadly. So Jake shows up on the boat. Stupid Brittany starts blying about how peaceful it was and how sad it is that he wasn't with her. He just encourages her to find another place to live and is generally not in a mood for sexy repartee. Clip two.
I gotta get down below and tear out the bilge pump.
If I had a nickel.
I just love that. Nothing shuts down. Come on, like, bilge pump. Good job, Jake. And yet, she is not deterred and starts kissing on him again as she reiterates how grateful she is to him. But he only briefly kisses her back this time before saying again, he's not in a relationship mood right now. And then Amanda goes to pay Jake a friendly visit on the boat with a picnic basket sometime later. But it's greeted by Brittany instead, who makes sure to tie her tank top up over her midriff as she informs Amanda that Jake just popped out to pay his slip fees. She offers coffee, which Amanda declines, handing her the basket. And when Brittany asks if she should pass on a message, Amanda says she can let Jake know he's a lying pig. So then, some other number of days later, Brittany's just finished rifling through cupboards when she hears Jake coming and poses innocently with a book that she at least appears to be holding the right way up. He says he just walked into a buzzsaw at the apartment thanks to her, which, who cares? You and Amanda broke up. Like, it's none of Amanda's business anymore. A, B, why didn't we see this conversation? But whatever. It's exactly why he didn't want Brittany on the boat. Drama. Again, for the, like, 19th time, he says he wants her to leave. And she says that's fine, but as she advances on him, she says she just thinks he's been around the wrong kind of women. Ones who are possessive, jealous, and clingy, and want something from him. He should have been with someone who just wanted to give him pleasure, do what he wanted to do, and make him happier than he's ever been in his life. And as usual, he immediately starts kissing back, plus this time whips his shirt off in no time flat, too. So way to close, Brittany, finally. Speaking of closing, we then see her walking up to a shadowy figure at that good old Mulholland Drive overlook, and clip three.
Well, it took me a while, Palmer, but I finally got him to sleep with me. I think he's beginning to trust me.
Good. That's very good. I'm gonna make Jake Hansen so sorry he ever messed with me or my little Amanda.
Okay, I mean, that is a pretty good reveal. I'll give them that. Mm-hmm. However, on the lamb guy.
Yeah.
Fucking go to Ecuador. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Yeah.
Or Brittany.
This is soap nonsense. Like, yeah. that's the only reason it's happening. It is not practical, as you said, for a guy who is a fugitive from justice to be coming back to town where he did all his crimes just to for this, like, petty bullshit.
Yeah. Also, if Jake figured out your crimes before, he'll probably figure this out. No mm-hmm. one else hates him that much.
No.
Also, if the traditional gender roles were reversed here, Brittany would be committing felonies, basically. Like, stop. Get out. I don't know. Like, again, I understand it's a soap opera and this needs to occur.
Right.
But she is such a blah as an actor. And it's like, just not, I don't know. And I just keep looking at how her hair is incompletely straightened and it's bucking the shit out of me. Go away, Brittany. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, and in terms of, like, stunt casting, like, her?
Yeah.
Was Kathy Ireland that famous? Like, was she that much of a draw? I don't get it.
I mean, she was a Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue cover person, which sure. I guess is what was required here.
Right.
I mean, you know, I've seen worse acting, but not much.
Right. I mean, we'll get into this when we talk about the magazines, but like, I guess maybe this was a sop to the guys who were, I suppose, were supposed to think forced by their girlfriends to watch. Like, look, there's something for you too. Like, okay, whatever. Like, I don't know.
Anyway. That's what Amanda's for. Come on.
True. Anyway, moving on to our B plot. While Allison's away suing her parents, that very same Amanda and Billy collude. So Bruce tells Amanda he heard that Escapade magazine, where Billy works, not that we've seen him there much lately, is looking for a new ad agency. This will not become clear until the next episode, but it has nothing to do with selling ads in Escapade. It's about promoting Escapade in ads. I was like so confused by this, but like, okay, I get it now, having watched the next one. Bruce would love to have an in there before he approaches Escapade and vaguely remembers that Allison's new husband works there. And isn't Allison still on her honeymoon? And Amanda corrects him on the particulars. So, you know, forget all the nice things that we said in the last episode about her actually being a supportive friend to Allison for once, particularly since the next thing she says is that she's still friends with Allison's fiance and will give him a call. And Amanda hints that she will try and find out financial information, too. And Bruce is coy about it so that we know it's not kosher for them to even try this kind of stuff. And then Amanda's assistant puts through a call from Allison, who is at the airport, but available by phone or fax in Wisconsin if she's needed. Amanda tells her to focus on her family situation, and poor stupid Allison thanks her for being so great. And when we next see Allison, she and Meredith are in the offices of Michael J. Fox's dad from Teen Wolf, attorney at law, who here is called Harry Allen. He's known them all their lives, he exposits. Didn't think they would be the type to make up stories. But everyone in town will have a hard time believing that Mr. Parker did the things they're alleging. So are they sure that this lawsuit is not a mistake? And Meredith immediately gets ready to fold, but Allison gets heated as she monologues her refusal to drop it. And Harry's convinced, but warns them it won't be easy. And she firmly says they're ready because they've been waiting a long time. And Meredith this whole time, like, just looks like she wants to flee. Allison is ignoring all of the signs that Meredith's trying to put out. And, you know, I would also have liked to see the conversation they had where she changed her mind, because this is not where she was the last time we saw her at all. But again, okay, another important off-screen conversation. Mm. Annoying. Back in L.A., Amanda makes her pitch to a suspicious Billy, where else? Shooters. Her idea is that she will tell Bruce that Allison convinced Billy to give the work to D&D, and then Allison will get to handle the account, which will be a professional win for her, and he's still not sure. And the next day, the Parker girls are getting dressed for court when their mother shows up at their motel. Mrs. Parker and Meredith are obviously stiff and cold, seeing each other for the first time in 10 years, but they blow past that because Mrs. Parker's there to ask her daughters to stop this. She basically ignores Allison as lost cause and begs an already weeping Meredith not to destroy Mrs. Parker's life. But Meredith holds it together and says they're not the ones who want to hurt anybody. Allison denies they were talked into anything by a lawyer. And in response, Mrs. Parker digs her hole a little deeper. Clip 4.
Don't you try to comfort me. You two are putting a knife in my back. You're pathetic, you know that? We have to get out the truth. Everybody lies. The world is full of it. And everybody lives with pain. But not you two. Oh, no. You're going to live pure and clean by covering your parents with filth. I wish I'd never had you, either of you. I wish you'd never been born.
Sheesh.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty effective. Yeah. I wish they hadn't, you know, brought in like a hint of the sexy guitar at the end there, that it's like, this piano sometimes leads to mournful sexy times. Other times it's a rant, you know, from a mother whose spouse committed incest. Like, someone want to put an ear on that before Final Cut? But yeah, I mean, this actor is good.
She is. She's very good. And this is rough. Like, they are not backing off any part of this, which I admire. But, yeah, it's tough to watch.
Yeah.
Back in L.A., Billy is working on an article when Amanda calls him to say they're all ready to get their pitch to Bruce, including the numbers that Billy slipped in. She just has a couple of changes for him to make, and he can do them real quick and fax them back, but he can't since he's doing his actual job. Back in Wisconsin, where Meredith is nervous as a cat outside the courtroom about how long it's taking before they're called to go in, their lawyer tries to keep her and Allison calm by repeating what the process will be once they get in. But as Meredith gets increasingly rattled, the door opens and the judge, who is James Karen, the minister from Kelly and Brandon's wedding that wasn't, comes out with...
Who I just watched try to marry Carla on Cheers during my rewatch.
Wow. Okay. That makes sense. So he comes out with their parents calmly saying he's going to get to the bottom of this whole mess. Uh-oh. Clip 5.
I knew this would happen. This town is a joke.
Keep it together, Meredith. We'll tell our story and they have to hear us.
Come on, Harry, and bring in the ladies.
I thought at a hearing everybody was together.
Judge Thomas likes to treat special cases with, you know, care.
You girls ready to talk to me?
Yeah, we are.
Good. Let's try to straighten this thing out, huh?
No, I'm not gonna do this. I'm sorry, Allie. I'm sorry, I can't. This whole thing is a setup. I'm not gonna help them. This is Judge Thomas, for God's sake. He got Dan into the country club.
Come on, the truth is on our side.
No, it isn't, Allison. Mom was right, Allison. It's lies. The whole world is just, it's lies. Do you really think that Dad's golfing buddy is gonna believe us? It's over. I should never have let you talk me into coming back here.
Oh, Meredith, please don't give up.
Whew.
Wisconsin justice does it again.
Damn. Yeah. It's not great.
No.
So at a diner later, Allison tells Harry she shouldn't have pushed Meredith, but she thought that hers was the only way to get her soul back. Harry says a futile effort doesn't make you stronger, it makes you crazy. Allison reminds us all again that Harry's known her since she was a kid and asks if he believes her. He does, and he's sorry, but just one voice against Mr. Parker isn't much. He advises her to go home and put all this behind her, and she agrees that there's not much else left to do. And at Escapade the next day, Nancy tells Billy he might like to know they have a new ad agency, D&D. She was so impressed with the copy and the presentation. The writer really knew his subject, and Amanda told Nancy that Billy wrote it. Why would Amanda do that? What? I mean, I guess we find out, but, like, it's crazy that she would just volunteer that. She has to know he's not supposed to do it.
Yeah.
So he starts trying to say he was covering for Allison, but Nancy says he's contracted to write for Escapade and went behind her back to Moonlight. It's a conflict of interest, and it's dishonest, and she doesn't like spies, so he's fired, obviously. And so he goes straight to D&D to stomp into a meeting Amanda's having with Bruce to yell at her about it. But Bruce interrupts his rant to offer him a job as senior copywriter, which, I mean, this is kind of bullshit.
Replacing Chaz, who you also had a boner for, Bruce. You suck at this, dude.
He does, but I hate to say it. Like, ad money is good money, Billy. Take it. Get into this field. This is a good time to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
So then on her way out of town, Allison asks her cab driver to make a stop. And in the backyard of the Parker house, Mr. Parker is apparently throwing an I beat the rap on molesting my daughter's barbecue, which the fucking judge is attending. So looks like
along
Meredith
with
is
the
right.
Rest of their entire town. Like, guys,
he's in like a fucking kiss the cook, like apron,
literally
grilling ribs, like. This is, of course, the stop that Allison wanted to make. She's horrified to see the yard set up with, like, fucking rented tables and matching tablecloths and chairs and the entire town there. So she makes a beeline straight for Mr. Parker, who, you know, asks why she is there. She knows he must think that he has beaten her and Meredith, but even if they didn't get justice in court, he still has to live with himself. And both parents try to get Allison out of there, but Allison decides to make a scene instead. And this clip is long, but, you know, it's worth it, I think. Clip 6.
Oh, come on, Allison, grow up. It's over.
No, it's not over. And it never will be over. Not for my sister and not for you, because we all carry around this dirty little secret.
that everybody in this town should know.
Don't you say it. Don't you dare say it.
What are you going to do? How are you going to shut me up? You're going to hit me? You're going to take me down into the basement again? Look. Everybody's watching now. Everything is finally out in the open. You changed me and Meredith forever. We were little. We were innocent. And you touched us.
Shut up with this crap! What do you want me to do, huh? What do you want me to do? I loved you. It's all I ever did. To try and show you how much I loved you.
John, please come in the house. You don't know what you're saying.
Oh, shut up. It's your fault.
It's my fault. How can you put this on me?
You were cold, so cold. You hated my touch. All I wanted was a little warmth, a little understanding. So I went to my daughters. So what? Huh? All you had to do was touch me. I didn't hurt you.
John, for God's sake, shut up.
Go on. Come on, leave. But you hypocrites, huh? Go on! Women, they show everything. But you can, you'd never touch. All I wanted was a little warmth. It wasn't my fault, Allison. It wasn't my fault.
I was 8 years old. I trusted you. Sure as hell was your fault.
Oh. You know what makes that worse? Is the Jimmy Stewart cadence of a lot of that.
Yes. Oh, God.
Well, and also that you can still hear the ribs fucking sizzling on the grill.
There's going to be a moment. I got to deal with these ribs. So I'm going to get back to this disturbing talk in a moment.
Happy New Year to you in jail. Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, it's disgusting, but you know, like she got him to admit that he did it in front of the town, so mission accomplished. Like, I guess,
if you're gonna do this story, just do it. Like, slam the gas pedal down and just go all the way over the side. Might as well.
And they did. Ugh. And I should also mention that since I doubt we'll see her again, we learned on Twitter, or I did, that at this time, Tracy Nelson was married to William R. Moses, a.k.a. Dead Keith. Who knew?
Huh.
Our Twitter follower did, so thank you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dead Keith.
Finally, our A-plot. Jane helps Sydney with her murder case. Kimberly helps Michael with his recovery. Okay, so I have cognitive dissonance because Chakotay from Voyager is investigating Terry's murder on Models, Inc., and now Tuvok from Voyager, Tim Russ, has taken over Detective Truman on Michael's attempted murder case on Melrose, which is weird. This is all happening pre-Voyager, but it's still a very strange coincidence.
I didn't have that problem. I'm sorry to hear that you were struggling with Voyager
I'm not.
Casting.
I just watched Models, Inc., and then I watched this immediately afterwards and was like, wait. Anyway, Sydney, in jail scrubs that also look very nice on her, is telling Detective Tuvok, who here his name is Chambers, that she did want to kill Michael, but everything she did was at Kimberly's direction, and at a certain point she stopped being involved. She has waived her rights to an attorney. Oh, Sydney. Because she wants to help them catch Kimberly, and she insists that Kimberly's crazy and they have to believe her, but they do not seem convinced. Elsewhere, Kimberly brings Michael home from the hospital, but nothing looks familiar to him. She doesn't seem bothered as she helps him into bed and says the only thing he has to remember is that she loves him. And then Detective Chambers is at the door to ask her about Sydney's allegations, although he uses the phrase, do away with Mr. Mancini, which, like, would a detective be that cute about it?
Like, oh, what? God.
So Kimberly...
do away with arsenic in the library. Colonel Mustard.
So Kimberly brightly says that poor girl is so unstable, and Kimberly just feels sorry for her. And of course, she never tried to do away with Michael. She loves him more than her own life and would take hers before his. And asked whether she and Sydney ever discussed the possibility of an accident taking out Michael, Kimberly freestyles, clip 7.
She came to me desperate for an alibi. She wanted to say that she was with me when he was nearly killed, but of course I refused. Michael gave me this engagement ring. We were getting married, and he left her for me so we could finally be happy, and she couldn't stand that, so she tried to destroy him.
Well, you can tell her from me that I'm taking care of him now, and she'll never have a chance to hurt him again.
Thank you, Dr. Shaw. I think I've got what I need.
Good. I'll do anything to help. Anything.
This is an actor having the best time.
So
best time.
I love her. I just love her.
I don't think I properly appreciated her when I first watched this, but oh my God, so good.
Just the
teeny eyebrow pops.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Yep. So that night, Michael thanks Kimberly for the great dinner that she made him and for taking such good care of him. She calls it a labor of love and swoops in to kiss him, but he puts her off. He doesn't know how she could be attracted to him in his current invalid state, but she knows what it's like to be an invalid. Clip 8.
I was with this awful man once. We got drunk one night and there was a terrible accident. And it left me disfigured.
Did I know you then?
Mm-hmm. And to tell you the truth, I was always too afraid to let you see.
See what? There's nothing wrong with you.
Yes, there is something.
She pulls off her wig and shows him her scar.
I have to say, like, the wig with the scar setup that she has, first of all, is, like, more skillful than you would expect for the show. Like, it's not realistic that with that forehead, it would look like it does. But the, like, the undercarriage is pretty good.
Yep.
And then she also, like, if she just let it grow out into more of a, like, pixie Chrissy Hynde situation, that would look cute on her, that length.
Yes. Well, she has such beautiful bone structure. Like, she has that sharp chin. She has beautiful cheekbones, you know.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. Marsha Cross is very attractive.
Yeah. Spoiler.
So then Matt, for some reason, goes to see Sydney in jail, and she tries to convince him that her crazy-sounding story is true. He, reasonably, finds it hard to believe Sydney did not have some part in her current calamity, but she insists that she didn't, which is semi-true, and that it's the two doctors from hell who are trying to get her executed. And laughing, Matt says she can't be executed for attempted murder, which is not so comforting to her, and the scene ends with her begging him to help her. Over to the studio, where Chris, is that his name? Is very professionally kissing Jane on the neck in front of all her employees. Her hair is long enough for a very tiny ponytail, which is an exciting development in Jane hair news.
Yeah.
And then friggin' Ken Howard walks in, and he is playing their dad.
I know. The White Shadow had two daughters that teeny. Okay.
Right. Yeah, his genes were not dominant in that mix,
no.
I guess. So I assumed he was dead when he was, no dad, was at the grandma will reading, but whatever, sure. And he also adds that their mother is not in town because she's too distraught, slash no one wanted to pay her. After introductions are made, Chris slips out and Mr. Andrews starts with self-incrimination about his inability to have protected either of his daughters from Michael. Apparently, he and Mrs. Andrew had a huge fight around will time about Sydney's marriage to Michael, and that Mr. Andrews couldn't accept that his daughter had become so amoral, meaning he didn't think Mrs. Andrews should have given up on Sydney so easily, I guess. I don't know. It's not really clear. Whatever. The point is, he has hired Sydney a lawyer, and Jane agrees to go with him to see Sydney later. And then we're back at the beach house as Matt lets himself in and finds Michael in bed alone, and Matt reintroduces himself. Michael says he mentioned Matt's name to Kimberly, who said they weren't that close. Matt hedges that they have quite a history and then checks that Michael really can't remember anything from his life before, which Michael says he can't. But Kimberly's been so great. They must have been a great couple before, right? And Matt's about to tell Michael the truth about how Kimberly was injured when she comes sauntering in, announcing that Michael needs rest, not to be chatting with work acquaintances, and hustling Matt to the door, where she advises him to give Michael his space and not to come by unless he checks with her first. And Sydney is effusive in her meeting with her dad because she's so happy his being there means he believes her. But then he has to break the news that he's not going to be able to post her bail because she is too much of a flight risk and the case against her is very strong. But is it? Like, it seems to amount to a wig in a drawer. Like, I don't really think it is. But anyway, if she cooperates with the DA, her lawyer thinks that she'll be able to get the charge reduced. But it does not sound like she will cooperate. Clip 9.
This is all Jane, isn't it? She's the one who went to the cops on me. Now she's saying I'm crazy.
Sydney, I love you, but this is on your head. Nobody else's. You've been out of control for months now.
You don't love me. You've got Jane. You're throwing me away. Come on, Daddy, say it. Say I'm a killer.
Damn it, now calm down.
Everybody's throwing me away. First Jane, Michael, now you. Oh, I wish I had been driving that car. I should have killed him. You know what? If you'd been there, I'd have killed you too.
You don't mean that.
Why not, Danny? You always thought the worst of me. You never believed in me. Now you've got what you want. I'm a killer. Maybe someday I'll pull your damn head off.
Okay. This is not helping, but I get it.
No.
I guess, you know.
As usual, this is like way better acting than this soapy writing merits.
Yes.
She really packs a lot of not being the favorite, like, poison into all of her interactions in this plot line. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, can't beat the White Shadow. He's not given much to work with, but he delivers.
Yeah, it's true.
So the next day, Mr. Andrews tells Jane at her studio that he's been talking to Sydney's lawyer about Hidden Hills, a sanatorium approved by the court. Neither of them loves this idea, but they did both see how Sydney was acting when they went to see her, which, by the way, is just how Sydney is, by the way. It takes the signatures of two family members to get someone involuntarily committed, and Mr. Andrews is hoping that Jane will help him, and she guesses it would be better than prison. And he just can't believe they're talking about the girl who used to be Jane's best friend. And he pompously says maybe now Sydney will get the kind of care she needs at Hidden Hills. And Jane says she'll sign so Sydney and all of them can get some peace. And then Sydney's being let out of the jail, asking the guard who posted her bail, assuming it was her dad, and threatening a false arrest lawsuit. But instead of being let off to freedom, she is literally strapped into a straitjacket while Jane and Mr. Andrews stand there looking on. Like, why would they even be there?
That is, I mean, none of this is how any of this works. Like, you don't just get to be like, oh, let's hide her from legal proceedings in.
Right.
The bin is A. B, you would not be present. C, they would not let her put civilian clothes back on.
No.
In order to straitjacket her, which, P.S., they're not using a straitjacket. It's not the 60s, despite Schiavelli showing up in the next episode as part of the Cuckoo's Nest Roadshow. It's like, no. None of this is how it works. And P.S., Hidden Hills is so hidden that the B-roll we see the next time... Different name.
Yeah. It's in the visual aids.
Oh, God. I mean, this plot line, whatever. Like, I get it, but I was just waiting for that. Remember the, like, painting of San Quentin with the fake lightning?
Yes, when Jack was in prison.
Jack McKay. I was like, is there going to be that, but like a teeny little stick figure of McMurtry? Not McMurtry.
McMurphy.
Yeah, McMurphy on there. Like, oh my God, guys, get to the point, please.
Yes, but of course, like, as soon as you drop a mention of a mental hospital on Melrose Place, like, someone is going to be like, okay, we need someone to source this a straitjacket. Like, obviously, you're not going to not have a straitjacket, of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, if no one in the regular cast witnesses Sydney being let off in one, did it really happen? Of course not. Like, that's why it's happening.
Not.
I'm not mad at it. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm not mad at it either. It was just like, and meanwhile, the White Shadow is like mentally counting his paycheck. Like, okay.
Yeah. I wonder if this is when he was SAG president, because he also was, by the way.
I think it was. He was SAG president for a while.
He was. Yeah. Man. Well, let us close up this delightful episode by naming our MVP.
I mean, it's tempting to say the Manhattan rule, but I'll skip it and say Kimberly.
Yeah, that's a good choice. I'm going to say Allison for once in her fucking life for actually doing something right. And, ruining her father's reputation in the town where he lives, as she should, because he sucks and is a disgusting criminal and deserves to be cast out from society.
Yep, agree.
Least valuable player. I mean, Mr. Parker is kind of a gimme. I think we can just take that as read. So.
I'm going to say all of the Parker's friends. Like Judge Pathmark guy, yeah. All the people who were like, well, he's a pedophile, but those ribs. Fuck you.
That's a good choice. I'm going to also say Palmer. Eyes on the prize.
Yeah.
Don't come back. You were getting away with being on the lam, clearly.
Yeah, that's a lam fail for sure.
Hashtag wow, lamb
really?
Fail.
Thank you. Next time on Again With This. Oh no. Tara is dead. Joe's baby gets some creepy grandparents. Matt gets suspicious. And Billy gets a heel turn. You should get a fistful of Malox before you check out our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book with excellent visual aids of its own by Julie Kane. So browse on over there today. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I'm Broken Bilge Pump Sarity Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Compromised Judge Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Awful Man David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Oh.